Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, August 16th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Chris Coleman proposes a tax hike in exchange for fee reductions and another step forward in building Southwest LRT. St. Paul residents might be in for some sticker shock if Mayor Chris Coleman's budget proposal becomes law. But the mayor says a proposed 24% increase in the total amount of property taxes collected in St. Paul is mostly due to an accounting shift, not a major tax increase. Peter Cox was at Coleman's budget speech yesterday and has this report.
More than a decade ago, the city of St. Paul started charging property owners fees for things like snow plowing, tree trimming, and pothole work. But a state Supreme Court decision last year has put an end to that practice, in part because churches and other nonprofits were subject to the fee along with private property owners. And now, Mayor Chris Coleman has presented a budget that reflects that shift, with a large property tax hike to offset the loss of about $30 million in fee revenue.
It's important to understand the city is not collecting an additional cent for these services. In fact, the budget that I proposed for 2018 is actually $1.5 million smaller than the 2017 adopted budget.
Coleman says the average homeowner will see their property tax rise about $12 under the new structure. Owners of more expensive homes will see a larger increase.
23.9% is a big number. It's difficult to stand before you and even propose it.
The three-term mayor, who has announced he'll seek the DFL nomination for governor next year, says it was not an easy decision.
But any other choice, however politically expedient in the short term, would have compromised public safety, reversed the progress that we've made in building world-class libraries and parks, and eroded the vibrancy that is stimulating new investment every day in the city of St. Paul.
The shift in fees to property taxes accounts for 19% of the property tax levy increase, and inflationary pressures on the city budget account for the other 4.9%, according to Coleman's office.
The talk of a 25% increase is astounding.
City Councilman Dan Bostrom attended Coleman's budget speech. He hadn't examined the full budget and wondered how it will play out for property owners.
If you save $1 million from the right-of-way as a taxpayer, and then you get another $1 million stuck on your property taxes, that's a wash. However, if it's $1 million here, but your property tax have to go up $1.5 million, that's another story. It's waiting to see exactly what that difference is.
Coleman's proposal adds $1.7 million for city paramedics to help with the growing demand for emergency medical responses. There's an additional $1.2 million to combat the emerald ash borer. Another $500,000 would go into a job opportunity fund to help provide capital to small business owners in disadvantaged neighborhoods. Coleman also proposed adding 6 officers to the St. Paul Police Department, 4 of whom would be specially trained to join a new mental health crisis unit in the department. Chief Todd Axtell was very pleased with the proposal.
Having the added resources to be able to address some of those unmet needs, and it also provides us an opportunity to teach other officers the best protocol, if you will, so that we can reduce unnecessary incidents where force may be used in the past, where we can reduce some of those situations through better understanding and better training.
But the city budget is a long way from being final. The city council will make final budget and tax decisions in December. Peter Cox, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Minnesota's 2 large public employee unions say that members have ratified new contracts with the state. Tim Pugmire reports.
The 2-year contracts, which still need legislative approval, cover more than 30,000 workers. They provide raises of 2% this year and 2.25% next year, along with step increases both years. AFSCME Council 5 Executive Director Elliot Side says neither side got everything it wanted.
We think it's a fair contract for Minnesota's hardworking state employees, and we think it's a fair contract for Minnesota taxpayers.
But Republican Representative Steve Drazkowski is concerned about the cost. He thinks the contracts will put a squeeze on state finances.
What part of government are we going to cut in order to make this happen?
Drazkowski sits on the legislative panel that must decide soon whether to recommend approval or rejection of the contracts. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Governor Mark Dayton holds another town meeting on water quality tonight in Mankato, and he's likely to hear a lot about water pollution from farmland runoff. The rivers surrounding the southern Minnesota city are heavily polluted, and that creates expense for city taxpayers. Mankato officials want the state to do more to stop farm runoff, which is a major source of water pollution. Mark Stile has the story.
Anyone who thinks farm runoff is strictly a rural issue should visit Mankato. Taxpayers in the city of more than 40,000 are shelling out growing amounts of money to deal with water pollution coming from cropland. This stream in the southeast part of the city is delivering water that drained mostly from farm fields to a city-owned stormwater retention pond, which helps prevent flooding and soil erosion. In fact, Mankato senior civil engineer Michael McCarty says the rural footprint of the drainage area for this pond is 16 times the urban portion.
About 175 acres of urban drainage and a little over 2,800 acres of rural drainage.
McCarty thinks the majority of water entering this pond comes from cropland. He says that means more expense to maintain the stormwater pond. That's because the rural water carries lots of eroded soil, which fills in the pond and increases the risk of flooding.
The project we did this year was to remove sediment.
Cost about $400,000. Drinking water is another concern. City manager Pat Henches says three-quarters of Mankato's drinking water comes from shallow wells in sandy areas near the city's major rivers.
And they're on the Minnesota River and on the Blue Earth River.
Both streams are polluted with nitrate, among other things, mainly from cropland. Henches says the city is facing substantial costs to address the problem, either with new wells or additional water treatment. Henches wants to tell the governor tonight that something's missing in state water pollution efforts. He says the city has done its part, spending millions over the last 20 years to clean up wastewater from its sewage treatment plant.
We've spent $25 million alone just on phosphorus management.
But Henches says the state has been far tougher on city wastewater than farm runoff. He wants the governor to put more state money into programs that help farmers reduce that runoff. Assistant Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Commissioner Rebecca Flood acknowledges state water regulators treat cities and farms differently. She says the state has little choice.
The Clean Water Act, when it was passed in 1972, specifically exempted row crop agriculture from Clean Water Act regulation.
Even so, Flood says the state is addressing farm runoff. She cites the buffers law that requires pollution catching grass strips along public waterways. The state is also launching new fertilizer regulations aimed at reducing nitrate levels in surface and groundwaters. Southern Minnesota farmer and trucker Steve Rose says he thinks most farmers are taking steps to clean up runoff from their fields. He's installed grass waterways and terraces on his land to reduce erosion and keep the soil on his fields.
The land is what we live off here. You have to take care of your land first. You just can't live for the day. It has to be forever, and we must take care of it.
But many environmentalists and water quality experts argue that relying on farmers to reduce runoff voluntarily isn't working, and water pollution is getting worse in Minnesota. The result is cities like Mankato often face big bills to get rid of pollution that arrives in farm runoff from far away. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Mankato.
A project to connect downtown Minneapolis to Eden Prairie by light rail is a step closer to reality. Transit planners have unveiled bids for the line's first big construction contract, but as Matt Sepik reports, uncertainty remains about whether the region will get more than $900 million in federal funding to cover about half the Southwest Light Rail project's cost.
Four companies submitted bids for major construction work on the 14-mile Southwest Light Rail line. After several delays in the process, Met Council staff made those offers public yesterday. Two came in around $800 million. The others were just over $1 billion. Metro Transit Deputy General Manager Mark Furman says the winning bidder will be responsible for key elements of the system.
This is what we call our civil contract, which covers really building the light rail, preparing the properties, building bridges, building 15 stations, retaining walls, rail crossings, and the like.
Several of the bidders, which are all joint ventures, worked on the Green Line between Minneapolis and St. Paul that opened in 2014. The Ames Construction Company of Burnsville, working together with Kramer of Wisconsin, made the lowest offer, but that doesn't mean they're a shoe-in. Furman says Met Council staff will spend the next 3 months picking through each of the bids to ensure the firms have what it takes to build the largest public works project in Minnesota history. The council is expected to pick a winner in November. In the meantime, the Met Council's new chair, Aline Churimoff, is trying to keep the project alive in an uncertain political environment. Snagging a $929 million federal grant is key. While President Trump's proposed 2018 budget cuts funding for transit projects, Churimoff says there are signs of hope in Congress.
There's some money in the Senate version, I think not as much money, maybe no money in the House version, and so we'll have to work with our members of Congress to try to reconcile that to make sure that there is funding available.
Churimoff points out that the federal government has never denied funding to a project this far along in the process. In the last 6 years, the Met Council has spent $185 million on planning what it calls the Green Line extension. U.S. Senator Amy Klobuchar is a strong supporter. The DFLer says it's unlikely the president will get the steep budget reductions he wants.
There's reason to believe he will not be able to cut it that significantly because we were able to keep the last budget in a strong way, and that was with the agreement of the two Republican leaders in the House and Senate and the two Democratic leaders, with the support, of course, of many people in our own delegation pushing for this.
But Republicans in the Minnesota legislature want Congress and the president to zero out funding. Earlier this year, Most signed a letter to Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao urging the administration to pull the plug. GOP State Senator David Osmek of Mound is a leading critic of the project. He says roads, bridges, and a more efficient bus system would be a better use of $1.9 billion than light rail. Osmek says the Met Council is jumping the gun with its bid process.
I think it would be much wiser for the Met Council to wait until they actually have some level of assurance that there's going to be money before they continue to blow more money on a system that people don't want or need.
The Met Council says it'll soon request bids for two more big Southwest LRT contracts for a maintenance and operations center in Hopkins, plus electrical and signaling work. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.